is the news.
According to Syrian media, at least three civilians have been killed in a major U.S. airborne operation near the eastern city of Deir ez-Zor. Palestinians in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus go on a strike following the killing of a Palestinian man by Israeli forces. Search and rescue operations are underway in southern and central U.S. following dozens of tornadoes that left more than 100 people dead. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Now, three Syrian civilians have been killed during a U.S. operation near the eastern city of Deir ez-Zor. According to Syrian media, the U.S. forces shot the civilians while performing a large airborne operation in the Basra town. American forces reportedly kidnapped a number of Syrian civilians during the operation, taking them to an unknown destination. Now, this is the second such incident in recent days. Some week ago, another group of Syrian civilians were abducted by U.S. forces. The U.S. intervened in Syria in 2015 under the excuse of waging a war on terrorism and without permission from the Damascus government. Well, to learn some more about that and get some more information, let's go to Syrian capital Damascus. Our correspondent Mohammed Ali is there. Mohammed, tell us more about this.
Yes, Syrian state media confirmed that the U.S. forces carried out an airborne operation in the eastern part of the country, particularly in a city called Al-Bsira in the eastern countryside of Deir ez-Zor. Now, according to locals who spoke to state media, they said that the U.S. forces carried out the operation with the assistance of the so-called Syria's Democratic Forces over there in that area, and that they, during the operation, they actually opened gunfire randomly on various houses in that city and also farms around it, which led to the killing of three civilians from one family. Also, the U.S. troops during the operation kidnapped a number of people and took them to an unknown destination. A similar operation also was carried out by the U.S. forces just about a week ago, also in that area in Al-Shahin, a village in Deir ez-Zor countryside. Now, it is to be noted that all activities carried out by the United States are illegal. According to international law, the Syrian government regards the U.S. presence in Syria as an occupation. And it is to be also mentioned, very important to say, that almost every couple of weeks or month we hear about civilians being killed at the hands of the U.S. Forces inside Syria while in such operations or in attacks by the U.S.-led coalition. And we've been hearing a lot of reports, even in the U.S. media recently, about how many civilians have been killed during the past years due to the operations and the attacks carried out by the United States, and also about the infrastructure damaged during such attacks, and that at the end of the day, all of those attacks, which the U.S. and its U.S.-led coalition claimed that it is against Daesh, did not lead to the elimination of that organization. But many reports actually say that such presence is in support of Daesh on Syrian territories.
Mohammed, I get a question, and this is what the Syrian media has reported. What about the U.S., the military, or the media, whoever? Did they confirm that they have conducted such an operation in Syria?
Well, we haven't heard any confirmation from the U.S. side or even from the U.S. coalition on such an operation. This is something that happened at dawn, local time, meaning it's still new, so we could be hearing kind of a statement coming out from there, but we will not be surprised if no statement came out, because at the end, in every military operation the U.S. carries out where civilians are being killed, they try to hide what they have done or what they're doing inside Syria. So definitely it's not a surprise not to hear from them.
Okay, thanks for that. Mohammed Ali in Damascus. Palestinians in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus have gone on a strike following the killing of a young Palestinian by Israeli forces. Local media saying that the strike is spreading all across the the city. Jamil al-Kayal succumbed to injuries he sustained during a dawn raid by Israeli troops. The Islamic Jihad movement has expressed condolences to the family of the victim. Israeli forces target Palestinians with live rounds while raiding their cities and towns in the occupied territories. Ramallah correspondent Mona Kendall says that the Israeli regime uses excessive force against Palestinians without any particular reason.
Human rights organizations accuse the Israeli forces of using excessive force, of using shooting in order to kill against the Palestinians. It's not about only arresting people, those who are claimed by the Israeli military to be wanted for any reason, but in case Palestinians threw even rocks and stones in order to force the military to be out of the areas, then the Israeli forces' option would be using live ammunition and killing people in cold blood.
Now, four people are killed and several injured in a shooting in a Palestinian refugee camp in southern Lebanon. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has blamed the shooting on the Palestinian Authority's security forces in Lebanon. Hamas says that the killings targeted the entire Palestinian community in Lebanon. The group noted that the incident served Israeli interests by undermining the security of Lebanon's sensitive south. The deadly shooting took place during a funeral held by for one of the Hamas members in the Burj al Shamali camp. He was killed in an explosion on Friday, which Hamas says was caused by an electrical fault in a warehouse. Now, taking a look at Yemen, the health officials there are warning about an increasing number of infants with birth defects. They say the use of internationally prohibited weapons by the Saud-led coalition has dramatically pushed up cases of congenital anomalies. Our correspondent has more.
The tragedies caused by the Saudi-led war on Yemen are going beyond the casualties of airstrikes and an ongoing blockade. The Yemeni Pediatric Society says the number of infants with birth defects has increased rapidly since the 2015 war that turned Yemen into a testing ground for internationally banned weapons.
The weapons used by the Saudi-led coalition against our country contain prohibited chemicals that directly affect pregnant women and fetuses. That has increased the birth rate of children with cancer and congenital anomalies, especially in the areas that are being continuously bombed, such as Sana'a, Hudaydah, Hajjah, and Sada.
Officials say chemical and biological bombs dropped from Saudi warplanes on Yemenis have made Yemen the world's worst epidemic disaster. They are calling for an investigation into recent cases of congenital anomalies.
Since the first day of the aggression, the Saudi-led coalition has used various types of prohibited weapons, including cluster and phosphorus bombs, to target residential and agricultural areas. As a result of environmental contamination, we witnessed a dramatic rise of congenital malformations amongst children. We demand the documentation of the pathological cases caused by these bombs to reveal Saudi Arabia's war crimes.
Infants are suffering a difficult condition in Yemen in the absence of essential medical supplies and healthcare facilities needed for their survival and well-being. Yemeni health centers have been in a dire situation since the start of the Saudi-led war.
As the war goes on, Yemeni children continue to be at the brunt of the death and destruction left behind by Saudi-banned weapons. People here believe that Riyadh has always been violating international law by using cluster munitions in bombing residential areas since it started its deadly war on Yemen. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
Now moving on, U.S. emergency workers are searching for survivors after a string of tornadoes killed dozens of people across six states. Authorities say there is little chance of finding survivors 2 days after tornadoes hit midwestern U.S. Kentucky is the hardest hit, with a death toll of more than 80 people. Many of them were workers at a candle factory in the ravaged town of Mayfield. The state governor says bodies are still found, warning the number could exceed 100. Relief efforts are also underway in Kentucky, supplying those affected with shelters and food. More aid will be delivered to the state as President Biden has declared a major federal disaster in Kentucky. Thousands of homes and buildings have been destroyed there. Twisters have also killed several people in the states of Tennessee, Missouri, and Arkansas.
The U.S. is stunned by a devastating storm of tornadoes that ripped through the six states of Arkansas, Illinois, Kentucky, Missouri, Mississippi, as well as Tennessee overnight. Strong thunderstorms triggered dozens of tornadoes that crumbled metal like paper, swatted down concrete buildings, and threw a freight train off its track. Among notable casualties are a candle-making factory in Kentucky, a nursing home in Arkansas, and an Amazon warehouse in Illinois. An Illinois resident explains how he was shocked by the extent of damage after he rushed to his mother's house.
The damage is worse than some of the stuff I've seen in war pictures, so it's pretty intense. You know, it's not anything that I thought when she called me and told me that, oh, all my trees are gone. I was like, I got here and I did not expect to see this.
The town of Mayfield in Kentucky was described as ground zero by officials and appeared post-apocalyptic. A restaurant owner says the town's residents have lost it all.
It was just, this is our hometown, and it's just devastating. Everybody's lost everything.
Rescue workers across the middle of the country are combing through wreckage for survivors. Scores of deaths have already been confirmed, and officials warn that the toll is almost certain to rise as they are sifting through the ruins for the missing. President Joe Biden is going to travel to areas affected by what he's described as likely one of the largest tornado outbreaks in the American history.
I'm monitoring the situation very closely since early this morning. This is likely to be one of the largest tornado outbreaks in our history. And it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy.
President Biden also said he would task the environmental agencies to take a look at the specific impact climate change might have had on the deadly tornadoes. A meteorologist says he has rarely seen anything like this tornado storm during his career spanning four decades.
I was watching the radar last night and I was saying, wait a second. This is December. How is this happening in December? This is the kind of thing you would only see at the height of the season, you know, March, April, May. I'd never seen anything like this this time of year. I mean, and you hardly ever see something like this in a career.
The tornadoes have left a trail stretching around 370 kilometers. The multi-state disaster has freshened debates about whether climate change had a role to play in triggering these tornadoes, which are believed to be quite unseasonal, and whether a warmer planet would mean the world should expect to see more disasters of the kind.
Now, COVID deaths in the United States are fast approaching the 800,000 mark despite a widespread vaccination process, and that according to data from Johns Hopkins University. Other tallies suggest the country's COVID-related deaths have already surpassed 800,000. The last 100,000 deaths were recorded in a matter of 73 days. The United States is the world's worst-hit nation, both in terms of deaths and infections. Meantime, American politicians are scrambling to push for more vaccinations amid fears of the spread of the new Omicron variant. Over 70% of the population there has been partially vaccinated. Still, the U.S. has seen more deaths this year than in 2020. Former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows is set to become the third associate of former President Trump to face criminal contempt of Congress charges. The recommendation against Meadows was issued by U.S. House of Representatives Committee investigating the deadly January attack on the Capitol. The Democratic-led committee is due to vote on the issue later on Monday. Similar contempt proceedings have already been brought against Trump's former chief strategist Steve Bannon and ex-Justice Department attorney Jeffrey Clark. Meadows initially refused to comply with a subpoena. However, he began turning over emails and other information this month. In one such email on January 5th, he said that the U.S. National Guard was on standby to protect pro-Trump people. At a rally a day later, Trump repeated his claim of fraud in the election and urged his supporters to march on the Capitol. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is facing calls to step down amid a series of scandals that have already taken their toll on the popularity of his Conservative Party. Now, Johnson's own ratings are also at their lowest in 3 years following those scandals, including one involving a Downing Street party held during last year lockdowns.
Back-to-back scandals are taking their toll on the popularity of British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and his ruling Conservative Party. An opinion poll shows support for Conservatives is down 4 points to 32%. That gives the opposition Labour Party a 9-point lead, their largest since 2014. Johnson's own ratings are also at their lowest since his party won a landslide in 2019. His popularity is 14% down in 2 weeks. A video was leaked this week showing Downing Street staffers joking about a Christmas party held there last December, while the country was under COVID lockdown. The scandal has already led to the resignation of Johnson's spokeswoman, Allegra Stratton.
My remarks seemed to make light of the rules. Rules that people were doing everything to obey. That was never my intention. I will regret those remarks for the rest of my days, and I offer my profound apologies to all of you at home for them.
The British Prime Minister has denied that there was a party and apologised for the video.
I apologise for the impression that has been given that staff in Downing Street take this less than seriously. I'm sickened myself and furious about that.
While the leaked video was the talk of town, reports came out about 2 more lockdown gatherings at the Downing Street, including one at Johnson's own flat. A probe is now underway into whether the parties broke COVID rules. The Premier is facing calls to step down.
Downing Street willfully broke the rules and mocked the sacrifices we have all made, shattering the public's trust. The Prime Minister has a duty, the only right and moral choice left to him. It is for his resignation.
Yeah. Labour leader Keir Starmer is strongly critical of Johnson too.
But there's also this basic question of trust, and that is broken with the Prime Minister, okay. And that's why he is unfit for office.
In recent months, the British Prime Minister has faced criticism over other issues, including his handling of a sleaze scandal, the awarding of lucrative COVID contracts, and the refurbishment of his Downing Street flat. That's beside revelations Johnson intervened to evacuate pets from Kabul during the chaotic Afghan withdrawal in August. Now the latest scandal involving the lockdown parties may be the final nail in the coffin as Johnson's popularity continues to plummet. More than half of those taking part in the latest opinion poll believe that the Premier should step down.
Well, that's a wrap for this broadcast.
You. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
from the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Closer, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Trip to Ardabil province, a beautiful province in northwestern Iran. For your information, Ardabil province has many must-see places, natural hot springs, the spectacular nature, and tall, magnificent mountains. However, my today's destination is not the nature of this beautiful province, but rather I'm going to visit the ancient monuments of Ardabil. So, my destination is Namin County, and I'm going to visit the dolmens of this region. If you want to know what a dolmen is, stay with me. Dolmens are monuments belonging to prehistoric era. These structures are made of flat, vertical, and horizontal stones. Dolmens are made of two or more upright stones with a single stone lying across them, making the structure resembling a table. Dolmens are among the most precious architectural monuments remain from New Stone Age or Neolithic period. The largest dolmen ever seen is in Brazil, and the oldest dolmen ever recorded dates back to 9111 BC. Dolmens are human-made structures built in the areas of the nature where no cave exists. Dolmens used to have double purposes, a place for living and holding special ceremonies, and a place for keeping the dead. While some dolmens are located on the ground, some other ones are under the ground. The dolmens that are located on the ground were used as a place for living, and those situated beneath the earth were used as resting place for the dead. Dolmens of Iran are mostly located in Talish area, the border heights and around Namin, Chayghushan, Astara, and the regions edging north of Aras River. Namin County is one of the outstanding places which has dolmens dating back to the Bronze period. I am now in Namin County. This county has many historical monuments and tourist attractions. This region used to be full of trees and has taken its name, Namin, literally wet, because of its proximity to the Caspian Sea. I'm so eager to see the dolmens of Namin. I am now standing beside one of these ancient dolmens. This structure has a simple appearance, but is very magnificent. I have to get close. How could the humans of thousands of years ago move these large pieces of stone? And how could they put them together in such a careful way? And let me tell you something interesting. These stones are attached to each other with no mortar between them. Countries, dolmens used to be known as magic, mysterious stones with supernatural powers. These stones were used for healing, putting a spell on someone, or as a charm for good luck. Some of the people of that era believed that there is a spirit inside the dolmens which empowers the stone. One of the most important characteristics of the dolmens of Namin is that they had somewhere for burying the dead along with their personal stuff. These dolmens are actually the ancient treasures of this region of Iran. I'm so happy for visiting Namin and its wonders. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, support for British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and his Conservative Party is plummeting after a series of scandals. The latest allegation of misconduct surrounds a Christmas party by his staff at the peak of a Tier 3 COVID lockdown last year. Now, his spokesperson has stepped down over the controversy, but the British public seem to want more, maybe even Johnson's resignation. But some analysts ask, how is that the holding of an illegal Christmas party will cause more outrage from the British public than their government's support for killing civilians in places like Yemen and Palestine? Is there a problem here with the overall moral compass? Stay with us as we take a look at all of this on the Spotlight.
Back-to-back scandals are taking their toll on the popularity of British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and his ruling Conservative Party. An opinion poll shows support for Conservatives is down 4 points to 32%. That gives the opposition Labour Party a 9-point lead, their largest since 2014. Johnson's own ratings are also at their lowest since his party won a landslide in 2019. His popularity is 14% down in 2 weeks. A video was leaked this week showing Downing Street staffers joking about a Christmas party held there last December, while the country was under COVID lockdown. The scandal has already led to the resignation of Johnson's spokeswoman, Allegra Stratton.
My remarks seemed to make light of the rules. Rules that people were doing everything to obey. That was never my intention. I will regret those remarks for the rest of my days, and I offer my profound apologies to all of you at home for them.
The British Prime Minister has denied that there was a party and apologised for the video.
I apologise for the impression that has been given that staff in Downing Street take this less than seriously. I'm sickened myself and furious about that.
While the leaked video was the talk of town, reports came out about 2 more lockdown gatherings at the Downing Street, including one at Johnson's own flat. A probe is now underway into whether the parties broke COVID rules. The Premier is facing calls to step down.
Downing Street willfully broke the rules and mocked the sacrifices we have all made, shattering the public's trust. The Prime Minister has a duty, the only right and moral choice left to him. It is for his resignation.
Yeah. Labour leader Keir Starmer is strongly critical of Johnson too.
But there's also this basic question of trust, and that is broken with the Prime Minister, okay. And that's why he is unfit for office.
In recent months, the British Prime Minister has faced criticism over other issues, including his handling of a sleaze scandal, the awarding of lucrative COVID contracts, and the refurbishment of his Downing Street flat. That's beside revelations Johnson intervened to evacuate pets from Kabul during the chaotic Afghan withdrawal in August. Now the latest scandal involving the lockdown parties may be the final nail in the coffin as Johnson's popularity continues to plummet. More than half of those taking part in the latest opinion poll believe that the Premier should step down.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the spotlight. Tony Goslin, historian and investigative journalist out of Bristol, and Fra Hughes, journalist and political analyst out of Belfast.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome both of you to the program. Let's start this off in Bristol. And Tony, your take on the overall reaction of the British public and dealing with this Christmas party scandal.
Well, look, Marcia, he's gone from hero to zero, hasn't he? The man who could get Brexit done, and now he's plummeting in the polls. But there's two important aspects to this that haven't really been covered, I don't think, anywhere near enough. One of them is, if Boris Johnson is to go, who is going to replace him? And I think we always got to look at the man standing in the shadows behind the curtain. and that would almost certainly be Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, who is very much a creature of the City of London. He's a former employee of some of the big financial institutions, and that would, of course, put them in the driving seat rather than the Conservative Party as a whole. So, you know, we need to look carefully at, you know, maybe what's going on here. If Boris is going to be moved out of the way, who is going to be taking his place? Very important, and people often forget that. It's very easy to throw mud at whoever's in power, and what we often forget is that actually maybe they are just put there in power by some more powerful forces behind the scenes. I think that's mostly the case in Western politics anyway. The other thing is that this seems to have all happened because Boris has instituted this thing called Plan B a fortnight or so ago, and there's been increasing calls from all sides for him to go because of this. Now, this is as a massive overreaction, in my view, to the Omicron variant. Now, you know, some have called this Omicron variant a gift from God, because what it does is it enables people to become immune after catching it, and it's very unlikely that anyone will die of it. It's a very mild version of the disease. So rather than embracing this, this has been jumped on as a terrible, terrible thing. And I think there's many people on all sides of the political spectrum, and particularly in the press, who feel that what Johnson's done by overreacting to this and following along with some of the alarmist speculation about the tens of thousands of deaths and hospitalizations that may result from something which the South Africans tell us is very mild is also related to this. So, I mean, I think it's clear that the press is leading this. And also, I think, whereabouts have these leaks come from, these leaks about the party? Let's look at the facts. So the party that Boris Johnson is alleged to have presided over, he wasn't at that party, and he took no part in it. So it's quite feasible that it was arranged by somebody who was at Downing Street, like his chief of staff, etc., behind his back. And I think that's not impossible, although, of course, he may well have known about it, and certainly the police, who would guard 10 Downing Street, would certainly have known about it. So it's very strange that they didn't act at the time. There are actually a lot of prosecutions going through in Britain still, right now, of ordinary people like you and I that were caught having apparently illegal parties at this time of year. Why not the top people? So the police have got a lot of questions to answer too on that occasion. So okay. I think, you know, what I'm trying to do, Marcia, is trying to get behind this, because I'm a little bit concerned when I see the press all going at the same time. And I'm also always very, very aware of if Boris is moved out of the way, who's going to take over and what influences do they represent?
Okay. All right. Well, let me get back in on this conversation. I mean, many say that they, the public's upset because they feel that Johnson lied. At least, as Tony says, that's exactly what's being talked about in the press. But, I mean, it wasn't like he was known to be an honest person before he was elected as Prime Minister, from his extramarital affairs to so many other situations, whether we're talking about Brexit or other lies that he has been known to tell. So, I mean, what is it that all of a sudden, as Tony has said, I mean, there seems to be an unbelievable reaction when you didn't elect an honest person to begin with. I mean, why such an uproar? They're thinking that maybe he lied now. I mean, what is this really about in your perspective?
Well, I would have to say it's possible that there's some form of a political coup going on in the background. If you remember that this actual accusation about the party in Downing Street was nearly 12 months ago, so obviously this evidence, this videotape, this recording has been in someone's hands for 12 months before it's been put out into the public domain. So it's possible there's a political coup in the background orchestrated by other members of the Conservative Party, indeed maybe front bench members of the Conservative Party who want to oust Johnson in favour of a new leader. That said, it was only in 2019 that Boris Johnson was denying accusations that he burnt a £50 note in front of a homeless person when he was a student many years ago in London. I think we should bear in mind that there have been scandals all the way through his premiership. We had the Dominic Cummings affair, and then we had Neil Ferguson resign, a senior analyst with the government. Boris Johnson has a track record of being a bit of a bluffer and a blagger, and he's someone who talked himself into power and talks himself out of trouble. I don't think Johnson will actually go anywhere. There's an 80-seat majority for the Conservative Party within the British Parliament. He's probably in a stronger position than any party political leader has been in decades. And I think it's very important for Boris Johnson that having such a large majority in the House, and there is no election planned before May 2024, I think he will just ride this out the same way he has done with every other political scandal in his career to date.
But Tony, Labour leader there is saying it's a problem, basic question of trust. And again, I mean, we look at this and it's almost comical, I guess, unfortunately, when we hear politicians talk about trust, but especially, again, Boris Johnson and his given record. It just seems, as you all you already mentioned, there seems to be political maneuvering out of this, that someone is trying to get to something else, of course, with the cover of this Christmas party. I mean, as you said, you're a journalist, so especially journalists know that when the mainstream media makes a big deal out of something, you better look behind it and see exactly what's going on. So you talked about some of the possibilities of the political maneuvering taking place here. Where do you see this going exactly? Do you think, opposite from our guest in Belfast, that it could actually cause the fall of Johnson or not?
Well, yes. I mean, I think I do, because, first of all, I'll say it was just over a year ago. All these so-called parties, etc., and now the things we've seen as evidence parties, happened about a year ago. But it was just before that, the resignation of Dominic Cummings behind the scenes. Now, he was the chief of staff at Downing Street, and he's a very Machiavellian character. He brags about reading Sun Tzu's Art of War and The Prince by Machiavelli. These kind of it doesn't seem as if he was in there to do a good job for the public. He was there to do political manoeuvring. It may well be him that's spearheaded the release of these various leaks at this particular time. And this is one of the things that happens, I think, I'm afraid, in journalism too, is that journalists and editors will hang on to stuff for a long time in order to use it to threaten and eventually maybe use it to manoeuvre out a specific individual, in this case, Boris Johnson. Now, there's another aspect to this, and that is there's something in the Conservative Party called the 1922 Committee. And this is a big, powerful committee of backbenchers, people who are not involved in the government. In other words, they're not on Boris's payroll. But what they can do is they can order a vote of the membership of the parliamentary party and of the whole Conservative Party of confidence in Boris. So even though Boris has got a big majority in the Houses of Parliament, it may be his own party can unseat him and replace him, even though he's in that position. So that is entirely possible. But I think it's also fascinating and very important, you mentioned yourself, the killing of civilians in Yemen and places like this, because, of course, all this gets drowned out in the distraction of what's going on at Westminster, which is effectively it's internal Conservative Party manoeuvrings, I think, that's going on. And it's not helped by the fact that the Labour Party is, in fact, next Tuesday, on Tuesday this coming week, the Labour Party is due to vote with Boris, supporting Boris, in the stricter COVID measures he's trying to bring in, whereas many of his own party are revolting against him. Well, what this means is that the Labour Party, the opposition party in Britain, could potentially bring down the government from voting against it and embarrass it, but it's choosing to vote with Boris instead. So there's a 40, 50, 60 backbenchers conservatives about to vote against Boris Johnson, and Labour could have voted with them and made it very, very difficult for Boris to continue and to have any credibility they have chosen. So what I'm saying is the real opposition politically in the Houses of Parliament, in the House of Commons today, is the Conservative Party. And that is an extraordinary position to be in the country. So distraction away from these wars abroad, I think you're absolutely right to point that out. This is still carrying on with British military facilities being moved over to Saudi Arabia to aid this bombing of Yemen, etc., which is continuing to this day. I think that these are the sorts of issues that get drowned out. What I'd like to see is some real, genuine leadership in the country, and also some genuine attitudes from the press in right across the Western world in calling out some of this horrifically amoral, immoral, attempts to manoeuvre, particularly in the Middle East. And of course, we've had the appalling news about the injustices to Julian Assange, which Boris Johnson himself doesn't seem to have mentioned once, even though it's one of the most important court cases ever to take place on the planet, which is taking place right now in London. Boris has nothing to say about that, and that's another reason why he's losing support fast.
Okay, well, turning back to Belfast, I mean, your perspective, Tony just mentioned, for example, Assange, and I want to look at that situation that we don't see that type of outrage one would think would see coming out of the British public. And again, I go back to London's support for repressive regimes, whether we're talking about Israel or Saudi Arabia, or we're talking about Bahrain, that they're giving these weapons to these repressive regimes and supporting them in so many different ways. And yet nothing is said. Is it because the British public, the public is not informed? Is it that they don't care? Or is it the role of the media? How do you assess this overall?
Well, I think what you've asked is a very, very, very interesting question. If we stick with Julian for just one second, his exposure of the Afghan war logs was what brought him to the attention and WikiLeaks of the world public. He exposed war crimes carried out by America, done in the name of the American people, part of the propaganda war that's preceded nearly everything that's happened with these humanitarian interventions throughout the world on behalf of Britain, NATO, America, mainly at the behest and in favour of strengthening Israel's position within the region by attacking strong anti-Zionist governments that stand with and beside the Palestinian people. So Julian is suffering from the revenge of the American administration for him showing the world what America is doing in the name of democracy and these humanitarian interventions. I think that Britain is completely complicit in the war crimes that are carried out within West Asia and the Middle East. I don't think that some people who claim Britain are the lapdogs of America and have somehow, you know, bowed down to American demands to have Julian Assange extradited. I think Keir Starmer, who was involved in the original prosecution, I believe Boris Johnson and the whole British establishment are more than happy to see Julian Assange face 175 years in the darkest, deepest hole that they can find in the American penal system. So Britain is complicit and has always been complicit in its own colonial history and in its present bombing of Yemen, probably secret attacks in Syria, the destruction of Libya. They are all birds of a feather, these neoliberal, colonial, quasi-imperialist, capitalist governments that are there to demonize and to extract resources from the southern hemisphere to come to the northern hemisphere. And I believe that the reason, it's quite possible that a lot of this is just pure distraction from the debacle of Brexit, from Julian's extradition, from everything that else is happening. It could be smoke and mirrors. Look over here as a distraction while we continue to bomb, maim, and terrorize people throughout the globe.
Well, Tony, it just seems that there is a lack of any type of moral compass in British politics. It just seems that it's money, it's economics over morality. I mean, your perspective on that and the effect of that type of mentality and those who are ruling the country, the effect that it has overall.
Well, look, I want to reassure you, Marcia, it's actually not all over British politics. There is actually a very important faction in both of the main political parties which does have a moral compass. It's just that the way the system works is that the Prime Minister will recruit yes men, and I would say actually what he's dealing with is a dwindling supply of them into the cabinet. I mean, for example, we've got, you know, a Home Secretary, Priti Patel, who was involved in all these secret meetings with the Israeli government, and yet she was invited back in, even though she broke the ministerial code when she was International Development Secretary. She was presiding over a massive assault against a vigil in the city, in the centre of London on Clapham Common, and yet she suffered no penalty because of that. I think Boris Johnson is paying the price of sticking with this small coterie of amoral Conservative MPs who he's managed to recruit into the cabinet. But there is, as I said, quite a force out there within the backbenchers in the Parliamentary Conservative Party who are getting increasing. They're looking at the numbers. The numbers of MPs who are pro-Boris and anti-Boris, and also the numbers of members of the Conservative Party, and they're realising they're getting to the point where maybe they can just unseat Boris and replace him with somebody else. And quite who that, I mean, that, like I said, it may be Rishi Sunak. But I think we also need to look, when we're looking at the perspective of all these sometimes incomprehensible wars that are going on in the Middle East, the British and the Americans particularly have been supporting, that there is a long-term plan. First, during the Second World War, to institute the State of Israel, and secondly, to create a war in order to discredit all the three main monotheistic faiths. And this, I think, has been ongoing for a long time, and many people haven't actually seen that this is an attempt to actually... I mean, people say, like my own family, I talk to them and they say, well, no one wants a war. Well, actually, some people do. For these sort of spiritual and ideological reasons, they want to have a war to discredit these faiths, and they also want to have that war to make a lot of money. And so the only forces we've got are within the House of Commons, the people who are not in the key positions in Keir Starmer or Boris Johnson's cabinets, you know, the shadow cabinet Starmer's got, those are the people I think that may make a difference here.
Okay.
And it's very important that we keep a very close eye on what these backbenchers are up to, because they will decide Boris's fate.
All right. And for 1 minute, where do you see all of this going in and affecting British politics? Your assessment overall?
Well, I think there was a very interesting poll that came out recently, a YouGov poll on how politicians act in power and why they are there. 5% of the respondents said that politicians were there to work on behalf of the public, and 63% of the respondents said the politicians were there to promote themselves. So what we have are millionaires and billionaires in an elite clique within the political structures that govern the country, and people like ourselves see them for what they are. They are people who are self-promoters and are using politics in order to line their own pockets.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me on the Spotlight. Out of Bristol, historian and investigative journalist Tony Gosling, and out of Belfast, Frank Hughes, journalist and political analyst. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. Make sure you join us right here next time. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This man changed the world.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر خمینی
رهبر. بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. In the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello, and welcome to our audience, and particularly a warm welcome to our listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World. And as I say, he changed all our tomorrows. This program is not only a biographical account of the great personality of Imam Khomeini, may God rest his soul, but we are also talking about what shaped this personality. We are looking at from the depth and the perspective of what made Imam Khomeini, Imam Khomeini. And therefore, we are looking into the aspects of the source, which is, of course, Islam. And we are talking about a pure Muhammadan Islam, which means that this is looking at the purity of Islam in terms of what one of our experts, our guests, said in the studio, and that was that it made an Abu Dhar out of a shepherd. So if you know anything about Hazrat Abu Dhar, which was one of the great companions of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, back in the 7th century, and this is in a time of Jahiliyyah, which is known as the Age of Ignorance, that is because the number of people who could read and write in the Arabian Peninsula at that time could be counted on your fingers. So therefore, Islam really revolutionized the entire globe. It revolutionized the Arab Peninsula and brought a great civilization out of it. And of course, that's what we're talking about, because this is what we're talking about in terms of what Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, brought to the 20th century. In a time where we were supposed to be in modern times, where religion didn't have much of a place in our lives, and of course materialism and secularism were dominant. And suddenly, this man breaks the whole mold and brings back religion to the top of the agenda. So I have my guest, Dr. Hassani, once again, and it's a great pleasure. Salam, and thank you for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great. I mean, you gave us a very, very interesting perspective from the program last time, and you were talking about the fact, you know, that Imam Khomeini never used the word I. And I want to quote here from ulama, from the tradition of the school of Ahlul Bayt, who say that Imam Khomeini was so disturbed in his life, at any moment in his life, where he felt that he was, you know, going out of the fold, if you like, if I can put it this way, that if he felt that there was the slightest error in his practice before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that concerned him most. You know, what was permissible, what was impermissible. Now, that's not something that, you know, we as human beings can speak about, really. I mean, he talks about